Tired of buying a bunch of different shorts for working out, looking good, and just life in general? Try Bird Dogs. They feel like gym shorts, but look like khaki shorts. The ultra-breathable fabric keeps you cool, and the built-in liner is an added layer of support. To top it all off, Bird Dog shorts look so good, you can wear them anywhere. Go to birddogs.com/MLB and enter promo code baseball for a free baseball hat with your order. That's birddogs.com/MLB, promo code baseball for a free hat. You won't want to take your Bird Dogs off, we promise you.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Visit betterhelp.com/positive to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
It was a Star Wars weekend. Bob and I watched episode 2. Bob hasn't watched Star Wars nearly as much as I have, and he is I guess he's a burgeoning nerd, but I will give him credit because he appreciates the Star Wars nerd in me, and I guess he has family members who are Star Wars nerds, so he's decided now that it's okay to embrace that part of himself, the dark side, if you will. And so we are working our way through. I've never watched the movies chronologically. I've always just, I watch whatever they come up. But I usually would say start with how they were released. But this is actually fun to watch chronologically. And episode 2 is my least favorite, but we had to get through it because he hadn't seen it in 20 years or something. And so we had to get through it. And so I laughed at Hayden Christensen most of the time and told him, I yelled at the TV because we were watching remotely, obviously. And so I kept yelling at him to stop being such a simp. I know that's why they hired him. And I know that they tapped him for that role because he could get people to hate him. But my goodness, do I just despise his Anakin Skywalker.
It's horrible.
It is horrible.
But it's like so good at the same time.
Right.
You know?
I mean, it's fitting for the role. It's right. Very fitting. And then if you watch the new Obi-Wan series and you see him and Ewan McGregor together again, it's actually pretty cool. And I will say this too, this is going a little deep dive for Star Wars nerds. If you are someone who's watched the Clone Wars, I keep trying to tell Jay to watch the Clone Wars. In fact, Bob and I are supposed to watch the Clone Wars, and because there's 7 seasons, we may not get to them all. But Clone Wars version of Anakin Skywalker is awesome. It's really good. The animated version of Anakin and also of Obi-Wan, their chemistry is just as good as it is in the movies. And the chemistry is really good in the movies. They have a great back and forth with each other.
Does Hayden voice Anakin in
the Clone Wars? No, he doesn't. I can look up the actor. It's actually an actor that you would know. But the two of them, that chemistry carries over to the animated, which is why I love the Clone Wars, because you get a lot more about their relationship. You get a lot more about the period of time between Ep 2 and Ep 3, which is Attack of the Clones and then Revenge of the Sith. So I do love the animated Clone Wars. But I had to hold my nose and watch episode 2 just so we could get through it. So that was Saturday night date. It was fun. Anything to do with the Star Wars universe makes me happy. I'm actually finishing up a Star Wars book right now, which goes back to the days after Return of the Jedi. So, yeah, I'm a total nerd. But
just the dark side, embrace it.
I definitely do. Thank you, Kyrie. I wish that you meant the same thing that I meant by the dark side. Either way, it's cool that it's not a deal breaker with Bob. And actually, coming up later on this week, we'll be able to do a movie night in person, which is long overdue. Finally get together with Bob again. And if you're wondering who Bob is, well, it's a mystery. It's just, that's what it is. He's the show mascot.
That's one way to put it.
I know, but he's not listening this morning because he's on vacation, so it's good. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you are in your typical routine on this Monday morning, well, good morning to you. We are as well. Coming off of Father's Day weekend, it's Juneteenth today, and it is a federal holiday, the newest federal holiday on our calendar, which means there are a lot of people who are not working or who are enjoying a 3-day weekend. or maybe even on vacation, like Bob, like me later in the week. I'll actually do tonight's show into Tuesday morning, and then I'll be out the rest of the week. But really good to talk about the U.S. Open. I always enjoy that. And, man, for the fifth year in a row, we've had a first-time winner. So we'll let you hear from Wyndham Clark. Who is Wyndham Clark exactly? It's a question I've seen and heard a bunch over the past couple of days, really. But the fact that he finished the U.S. Open with guys like Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler lurking is impressive for someone who had never finished higher than 75th in a major before yesterday. He'd only started seven majors. He'd never even made the cut at the U.S. Open before this weekend. So congratulations to Wyndham. We'll also hear from a disappointed Ricky Fowler, though he does keep a positive perspective, and Rory McIlroy, who is now nearly 9 years removed from his last major win, but he's got some wisdom that I adore that I want to share with you. Also, a couple of sobering headlines over the weekend. I just was talking about Bob Huggins last hour, and he's resigned. I can't imagine that he coaches again. In the case of Ja Morant, if you missed my interview with Rob Fisher, who is Memphis Grizzlies TV, sidelines and pre and post. So he's employed by Grind City Media there in Memphis, works with the team, sees these guys day in and day out. And he's been in this role predating Ja, so he knows the team really well. His reaction to Ja's 25-game suspension and also his answer to the question of what does the team need to see from Ja to know that he is on the right path. It was really powerful, his perspective. I will let him share it with you. We're going to bring back part of that conversation in 10 minutes here on CBS Sports Radio. Also, a question from a listener that I think is worth answering. Maybe he was snarky and was kind of piling on me, but the question itself I think is important to answer. It's about Ja and the situation with Ja Morant in Memphis, so we'll get to that. A little bit from the Major League Baseball diamond as well, as we're truly heading into the boys of summer. I love it. Wednesday is the official start of summer. So celebrate, party hardy. Maybe not as hardy as William Karlsson, but hardy enough. And the big news, if you didn't see it on Sunday night, or I guess Sunday afternoon, would it have been Sunday afternoon that the news was breaking? Bradley Beal, who will turn 30 before the next season begins, so still theoretically in the prime of his career, but a Bradley Beal who had kind of gotten lost in Washington, right? He's had a couple of different running mates, John Wall, then Russell Westbrook, and kind of a lone wolf this past year, and he's also dealt with major injuries. He had a no-trade clause, but he waived it so that he can get flipped to the Phoenix Suns. This is clearly a sign that the Suns are going all in, right? More all in than they were with KD.
You know, no complaints from me.
KD was all in, but this is really all in. It's a challenge for the Suns because they are going to be maxed out on four guys. We've seen other teams do this, right? We've seen other teams put together a core that they believe can win, pay them through the nose, and put role players around them, a lot of them on minimum contracts. You know who's done that? The Warriors. They've paid their core guys, and then they've had to bring in a revolving door of role players around them. But it's worked. Not every year. It didn't work this year. Let's be fair. It didn't work at all this year. But it has worked in the past where they've had to get creative about filling out their roster under Bob Myers, who's no longer the GM. They've had to get creative filling out the role players and believing and hoping that some of their gambles would pay off, which they did. We've seen the Lakers try to do this around Anthony Davis and LeBron James. They won a championship in the bubble. It didn't work this past season, though once they retooled their lineup at the trade deadline, it definitely did help them get to a place where they could be a contender. Teams gamble on this, right? They pay a couple of superstars, a few stars, buku bucks, and then they hope that they can fill out the roster with cheaper options and that those cheaper options come through when they need them, that they accept their roles. It's not a foolproof strategy. I was going to say fail safe, but anyway, foolproof strategy, but it has worked in the past. So how will it work in Phoenix is the question. And this may not be done today, although it could be. And you know, free agency, well, first of all, the NBA draft is Thursday. And then free agency really heats up in the early stages of July. So we're getting there. It's the silly season in the NBA. It's money that I can't even comprehend in my teeny little brain. The Wizards are sending Bradley Beal to Phoenix. And in return, they could get Chris Paul, Landry Shamet, and a couple of second round picks. Now, here's the kicker. I didn't even know Chris Paul was still on the Suns roster. I thought that they had released him, but that's not the case. What they're hoping to do, if they can, is loop in a third team that would be a contender that would take Chris Paul, that wants Chris Paul, but that also would allow Chris to be on a roster that has a shot at winning a title. Right? He is getting older. Not that he isn't still productive, but the problem is it seems like every single time that his teams are in the playoffs, he's not available. In the most critical juncture of the season, he's not available. He's 38 years old, just turned 38, missed the playoffs because of the groin issue. But there is a lot of respect for him in the league. And so even though it was reported that Chris Paul was getting waived, they actually found a different option in Phoenix. All right, so Chris Paul, Landry Shamet would head to Washington. Bradley Beal will in return go to Phoenix. But if they loop in a third team, maybe Chris Paul ends up somewhere else. Okay, we don't know about that part yet. But what we do know is the Phoenix angle. Here's Jason Timpf on The Volume about how the Bradley Beal trade could work out with the Suns.
Every recent NBA champion's got highly paid, highly qualified role players down the roster, and the Suns team is not going to have that. It's going to be a lot of veteran minimum contracts. Maybe if they're lucky, they can poach a really good forward on the mid-level exception to help them on the wing. But what that means is you're going to have a lot of guys on the team that aren't necessarily great at anything. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on guys like Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, and Kevin Durant to take on duties that go beyond their ball handling. So if the question is, hey, Jason, can this big four work? The answer is yes, as long as Kevin Durant plays like an all-defense player, as long as Bradley Beal and Devin Booker bring enough to the defensive table to make up for some of the inability to surround them with higher quality role players. It's going to be a lot of pressure on those guys to be great in those areas. That said, this is a very competitive group. Devin Booker in particular is very competitive. Bradley Beal, I know a lot of people are down on him, but I've seen enough high leverage basketball from him, especially in playoff situations, to know that he's a gamer and he's going to fight in those situations. So I definitely think it can work. That's just going to be the delineation right there. If they try to play the same way they've been playing at all their previous destinations, it will fail. If all three of them embrace the dirty work to another level, it will succeed.
Now, he's talking about a core four, so not a big three, but a core four, with Bradley Beal joining Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and DeAndre Ayton, who they managed to keep when they traded for KD. But the issue was, of course, they didn't have Chris Paul in the playoffs, at the end of the playoffs, and they also didn't have enough people. They just didn't have enough quality options, right? And I understand what Jason's saying on The Volume. KD can be a player that is really a pain in the rear on defense. He's got that length and reach, right? The issue, though, is can he play 82 games or even close to it? No way. They'd have to do the load management thing with him. Didn't work with Anthony Davis, right? Didn't work with Anthony Davis. Ultimately, because the Lakers had so little time and so little option off their bench, that was kind of the deal with the Suns, too. They didn't have enough quality role players and didn't have enough guys to play heavy minutes. And I kind of felt like they ran out of gas. And I don't think KD's in a place in his career where he can play 82 games, nor do I think he wants to. But really, can he? He's suffered for all kinds of injuries now. So yeah, there's a lot going on with the Suns. You've got four really good players, two that are otherworldly, and Beal, if he's healthy, could be an all-star again. Is it enough, though? How many minutes? What I think is a difficult West. The West is best. All right, on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Good to hear from so many of you. Kind of awesome. Still, the reaction that's coming in from the column that Peter Schwartz wrote about me last week. It was just a snapshot of my career, if you will. And not only do we have him here in studio to kind of talk about it and the angle that he was coming from, but also because he's a friend, I trusted him and kind of gave him some insight about my winding career path. And I just really enjoyed seeing so many of your reactions. It was very encouraging and supportive. And honestly, as challenging as it's been, there's very little I would change. It's put me in this place. I even got a text from a friend. So I know him, and I don't know that he knows my story real well, but he knows me well enough to say, hey, that was a great column. He writes to me on Sunday night, you are a rock star, and that is one heck of a cool story, which is really awesome. I mean, we've been friends for a long time, and I guess he just never knew some of the different elements of my story, which is fine. But I wrote back to him, I definitely wouldn't have labeled my journey cool. There's nothing about me really that's cool. Just take my word for it. I wouldn't have labeled my journey cool. And I certainly wouldn't do it again. That's what I said to him. I would not do it again. I wouldn't change it. It's made me who I am, and it's positioned me, and it's trained me and prepared me for this. But I would not do it again. So when you hear people say, oh, I wish I could go back to my 20s or my 30s, my instant reaction is not a snowball's chance in hell. I am not doing this all over again.
Come on, bro.
No way. I have gotten to a place where I'm confident and I'm content and I'm feeling creatively challenged every day in this position. I won't be doing this show forever. I think that's fairly obvious. Nothing is forever. And I've got some decisions to make coming up. But I love where I am. And it took all of the twists and the turns, the heartache, the disappointment, the failure. It took all of that kind of blood, sweat, tears element to get to this point. So I hope that comes out in the column. If you haven't seen it, it's on my Twitter, A-Law Radio, and it's definitely on our Facebook page too. But thanks so many of you for the responses. People that I've never heard from before kind of coming out of the woodwork in response to what Peter wrote. So thank you. Actually, I can retweet it one more time for you. So good to hear from you always. If you have this Monday off, well, good for you. I'm going to be happy for you. Straight ahead, Ja Morant, 25-game suspension to start the season. A little perspective from inside the group.
What you watch depends on what kind of mood you're in. Sometimes you're craving comedies like Friends or South Park, and sometimes you're more into dramas like HBO's Succession and House of the Dragon. There's also cooking shows like Chopped and Beat Bobby Flay, and even movies like The Lord of the Rings and Shazam Fury of the Gods. Well, Max is the streaming destination that has the best of entertainment for whatever mood you're in anytime. And plans start at as little as $9.99 a month. Max, the one to watch. Subscription required. Visit max.com.
T-Mobile's network can help keep you connected to all your favorite podcasts when you're out and about. Whether you're an early bird looking to dive into a daily news podcast or a night owl who wants to catch up on the latest reality TV drama, T-Mobile will keep you connected on their strong and reliable network. T-Mobile covers more highway miles with 5G than anyone. So if you need great coverage, especially when you're on the go, check out T-Mobile. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/CY. That's SEEWHY.
Well, whether it be upcoming life changes or ongoing events that may be causing you unhappiness, California Psychics is here to help you along the way and provide the joy of certainty through the insights of their psychic advisors. Since 1995, California Psychics has been the place where millions of satisfied customers have connected with some of the most experienced psychics worldwide, advisors who possess outstanding psychic abilities. Whether you want to unlock a mystery, clear a path, or just boost your inner power, their psychics are here to help you in matters of love, relationships, money, career, and all the things that matter to you. Talk for just $1 a minute. Your reading will be accurate and confidential with one of our vetted psychics. Find the answers today. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com to learn more. If it's not the best reading you've ever had, it's free. That's CaliforniaPsychics.com to connect with a California psychic advisor today. We've all got a lot going on in our lives. Maybe you just want a little extra insight. One place to get it, CaliforniaPsychics.com. Connect with that California psychic advisor today. One more time, CaliforniaPsychics.com.
Grizzlies, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Obviously, you know, I made mistakes in the past that, you know, caused a lot of, you know, negative attention, not only to me, but, you know, my family as well, you know, my team, you know, the organization, and I'm completely sorry for that. So, you know, my job now is, like I said, to, you know, be, you know, more responsible, more smarter, and, you know, don't cause any of that no more.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We heard from Ja Morant in late March when he had served an 8-game suspension with the Memphis Grizzlies, and he was back with the team. He admitted he had gone through some counseling to learn how to deal with stress, to learn how to deal with some anxiety, and that he was determined to not only be a better role model and to atone for his mistakes, and that was the Denver nightclub waving the gun around on Instagram Live, but he also said he wanted to be a better leader to the team. Well, a few days after the season ended, he was in a car in Nashville, once again live on social media, waving a gun around. And while some of you have rightfully pointed out he did not commit a crime, in Tennessee, that's not a crime, the commissioner of the NBA was mortified. He used the word shocked in an interview after he and Ja Morant had sat down face-to-face and had talked about it. And Adam Silver believed that Ja was sincere in what he said about being a better leader, making better choices, dealing with his stress better, and not putting himself in a position where not only did he embarrass himself, but also his team, who suspended him immediately, and he embarrassed the league. And Adam Silver had to be embarrassed by the fact that he had essentially vouched for Ja. So a 25-game suspension was handed down on Friday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Picking up a conversation with Rob Fisher, who's Memphis Grizzlies TV. He does sideline reporting as well as pre and post. And remind me where we're picking this up, Producer Jay. Okay, starting at the very beginning then. So I asked him, because he knows the team and he works with the team, his reaction to 25 games.
My immediate reaction was, I'm glad it's over. You know, I think I had kind of come to grips with the fact, and I think everybody in Memphis really kind of came to grips with the fact of it would be substantial. You know, I think 16 games would be substantial, and all the way up to where it ended at 25 is substantial. And I think it was just a matter of, let's get it over. We can move on. We can move forward. Ja can move forward. The organization can move forward as far as their offseason and then their planning is concerned. And now knowing how many games Ja's going to miss. So I think it was a relief to just get it over with more than anything. But I'll tell you what, Amy, it's weird that, you know, normally when you have a circumstance like this where a player will be suspended for a large amount of games, you'd have backlash or uproar and people ticked off at the league and, this is outrageous. But no one is saying that.
Wow.
No one. I mean, it's just kind of it was expected. And I think the numbers that were thrown out there were, we landed right at it. And I think everyone's just kind of under the same umbrella of, you know, the hopefully this is a lesson learned and hopefully he'll come back stronger and hopefully he'll get right mentally and, you know, and we can move on from this when it's over. So it was more relief than anything else, really.
Ja has released another statement with an apology, and he seems sincere and seems as though he understands not just the consequences, but also that his mental health is still a challenge and he needs to address it.
Yeah.
Why would people believe him this time?
Well, I think it's a very fair question. And you know, the bottom line is, I think Ja had to issue a statement. But I think even issuing that statement, everyone is under the same, you know, impression of your words don't matter anymore. It's now about your actions. And because, you know, we heard very similar words after the incident in Denver. The commissioner heard very similar words. And then 10 weeks later, something happens. I think, though, when you take a step back from it and you look at, you know, what's happening with Ja Morant and in his mental health, which we now as a society take a lot more serious than maybe we have in the past. Ja has talked about having, you know, battles with mental health issues. So many people, you know, heard that Ja went and got help during that time when he was suspended. I don't think that help stopped after those 8 days. I think it's something that continues. And something that frustrated me a lot was when Ja had another incident that everyone kept saying, oh, well, I shouldn't have been fooled that he went and got help for 8 days and he was supposed to be better. Well, that's not fair. And I think anyone who's ever dealt with mental health issues, and I personally suffer from depression and bipolar suicidal depression, and so it's something I'm very close with, that the bottom line is Ja Morant's never going to be fixed. People who suffer with mental health issues, it's not like you go to a doctor for a couple of months and all of a sudden you're fixed. The decisions that Ja Morant's going to make for the rest of his life are part of this process. You can talk to Ja Morant all you want about how his mental well-being needs to be different and what he needs to do for it to be different. But every time he comes up with a challenge in his life and has to make a decision, it's going to be something he's going to have to battle with. So this isn't something that's just gone in 2 weeks. It's not something that's gone in 2 months. This is going to be something that he's going to have to deal with the rest of his life. And it's going to be about, are you going to make better decisions? Are you going to realize how to put yourself in position to make better decisions? And those are things that he's going to have to deal with. And is he making those bad decisions because of, you know, having reckless days dealing with mental health issues? Probably. So those are things he's going to have to deal with for a long time. And I wouldn't say I'm close to Ja, but I'm closer than most with the opportunity to get to be around him, around the team and on the bus and on the floor and after games. And, you know, he's not stupid. And I heard that a lot. He's not an idiot. I heard that a lot. He's a very smart, intelligent, great IQ type of young man. And a lot of people who deal with mental issues, they have those types of problems, and they have those other qualities. So I think there was a lot of unfair talk towards Ja Morant, a lot of things that kind of struck a nerve with me. And the bottom line is, you know, we just hope that Ja gets better and Ja gets to a better mental place. And obviously, that's where it starts, I think, with all Memphis fans and those in the organization. You're concerned about Ja the person more so than you are about Ja the basketball player, because we know when Ja the person is doing well, Ja the basketball player is elite.
We're spending a few minutes with Rob Fisher, who joins us from Memphis. He's the Grizzlies sideline host as well as pre and post game on Bally Sports. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. And Rob, I certainly appreciate you sharing your own personal perspective on what's happening with Ja, but also what he's facing as a lifelong struggle, not something that's fixed easily. How much have you found that in the organization or with people who know him or work around him, that there is compassion and empathy for what he's dealing with?
Well, I think that really turned quickly. Immediately after the Denver situation. I mean, you get this video of Ja Morant in a strip club waving a gun. It does not look good. And within 2 days, it was the head coach to the general manager to his teammates saying, we're here for him.
Right.
We love him and we want him to, you know, get to a better place. And it happened quickly. I mean, like I said, Ja's a Ja's a really good young man. And from all indication, from everything I know, he's a really good father. So when you see something like this, it's disappointing. And then you feel for him. And I think you're getting that from, you know, the organization, and you're getting that from his teammates for sure. And, you know, it's just, it's something that Ja is dealing with. And I think he's got all the support in the world. I think, you know, it's funny. I had talked to the team mental health doctor. Grizzlies have a mental health doctor on staff. And I talked to her about, you know, reaching out and talking to Ja. It's amazing how many people have done that. How many former players, how many current players, how many people look at him. And I hope he takes advantage of those people and their experiences that they've had. And hopefully that can help. And, you know, I think it's more than just going up to Ja Morant and saying, "Hey, Ja, don't wave a gun. Don't go on Instagram with a gun." Well, no kidding. So I think it's much deeper than that. You know, and when you're dealing with mental health issues, I tell people all the time, my worst days are days that I would view myself as being reckless. And I think we've seen a few reckless moments from Ja Morant, and hopefully he's got a lot better days ahead. But the main thing is he's got to want to do it, because he certainly does have the support around him.
That's Rob Fisher of Memphis Grizzlies TV. He does the sidelines and also pre and post game, and was willing to share his experience as someone who has battled anxiety and depression. And I know him personally. We're friends. We made connections through our time in this business. And he's very open about his battles with mental health. Now, we don't know that Ja Morant has faced depression, or that his depression has led to suicidal thoughts, which is what Rob mentioned that he deals with. But it's Ja himself who has talked about his mental health. So I got this tweet earlier during the interview from someone who was listening, name Corey. And he says, "Am I missing something here? Ja Morant did nothing wrong. Maybe waving a loaded gun around isn't the smartest thing to do, but it isn't against the law. The man doesn't have a mental health issue. Stop it." Well, my response to that is, number one, he knew that was the one thing he could not do and avoid the ire of his employer. Right? I think if you're making smart decisions in your right mind, there's no way that you go and do the same exact thing on a live social media stream when you've already served an 8-game suspension for it and already made a boatload of headlines for that. You come back, you apologize, you own it, you stare the commissioner in the face, you say, "I want to be different, I want to be a better person," and then you do it again? Yeah, no, there's definitely a problem there. But also, Ja himself has mentioned mental health in his own statements. He said, "I hope that when I return, that you will give me the chance to prove that I'm a better man than what I've been showing you." And also this quote from his statement on Friday: "I'm spending the offseason and my suspension continuing to work on my own mental health and decision-making." And then one more factor. So that's number two, which would tell you very plainly this is not just about waving a gun around with his buddies in a car. The last thing is, it's pretty clear the people around Ja know there is a second layer to this. Not just, hey, he's a kid, he's in the spotlight, he's blowing off some steam, there's a lot of pressure in his job, so what, he's in a club. Well, first of all, it's against NBA rules to do what he's done. So there's that. He's defying NBA rules. He knew there would be another suspension. But did you hear what Rob said? Once the Grizzlies kind of got a handle on what was happening and talked to Ja after the first incident, their reactions right away morphed into compassion and care and support for him. The people around him recognize that this is part of a mental health issue for him, a mental health struggle. It's not just about making a dumb decision and being a 20-something and blowing off steam. No, everybody around him knows that this is something that he needs to deal with that goes far beyond bad choices, which is why he was in counseling, which is why he's talked about his mental health. So yeah, the people around him know. Ja himself has admitted it. This is far greater than just doing something stupid because you're young. The rest of that interview, also really good with Rob. A lot more perspective on where the Grizzlies go from here because they do have to make good choices for their roster. They've got 3 draft picks coming up in Thursday's draft, so you can find that on our podcast. The entire show will be available minutes after we're done this morning on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or our Facebook page. Producer Jay always posts the link. Okay, 99% of the time he posts the link.
Accurate.
And when he doesn't post the link, people let us know.
You are listening to the...
Why would you break into these apartments?
For money, for drugs, whatever was in there.
Weren't you ever afraid of getting caught at doing this?
No. Who's going to catch us? We're the police.
It was the early 1990s, the height of the crack era, and instead of locking up drug dealers, some New York City cops had become them.
I would suit up in my uniform and we're going to rob some drug dealers. And I know how to do it really well.
This is the inside story of the biggest police corruption scandal in NYPD history and the investigation that uncovered it all.
Did you consider yourself a rat?
100%. I saved my soul just like everybody else does.
Listen to and follow The Set, an Odyssey Originals documentary podcast series, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your shows.
I'm not a bad guy, man, but I loved being that dirty motherfucker.
After Hours Podcast.
Yeah! He takes down all the stars in Los Angeles to win the United States Open.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On NBC, the U.S. Open final call, and let's call it what it is, a Cinderella story. Who exactly is Wyndham Clark? I love it. A year ago, he'd not won on the PGA Tour. A year ago, he was ranked fairly close to 300 in the world golf rankings. 300. A year ago, he'd never made a cut at the U.S. Open. And even going into this year's Open Championship in L.A., he'd never finished higher than 75th in a major. 75th. Wyndham Clark just won the U.S. Open by holding off challenges from guys like Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler, two of the top players in the world. But not just that, he did not collapse, which to me is more impressive because he'd never been in this situation before, as in never. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. He's a Denver native. I don't know. That continues the run of Denver champions, does it not? With the Avalanche last summer, the Nuggets, they're probably still cleaning up.
You put that in your pipe, you smoke it.
From the ticker tape parade where Mike Malone was the star. And now Wyndham Clark, who wins the U.S. Open by going out there and essentially shooting par. Now, he had a birdie. He had a bogey. No, wait, I take that back. That wasn't him. That was Rory. Rory had a birdie and a bogey. Wyndham Clark started at minus 10. He was in the final group with Ricky Fowler. He was 3 up with 4 to play and then had back-to-back bogeys to make it a lot tighter. So he did have to stabilize. He did have to breathe. But maybe winning the Wells Fargo Championship 5 weeks ago at least gave him a little bit of experience to play off on.
It's now my second win on the PGA Tour, and first one was surreal, and this one's surreal. So You know, it hasn't quite hit me yet. Walking up 18 was pretty emotional, and then finishing. But yeah, it's been a whirlwind of the last 5-6 weeks. It's been, I'm just so blessed and humbled to be here.
First time making the cut at the U.S. Open. Pretty incredible. And pretty soon he will take another giant leap in the world golf rankings. I think he was inside the top 40 when the tournament began. And how about this? Now, this is just so, whoa. It's really the state of golf, right? Post-LIV and the LIV Tour throwing money around to attract golfers. He's had two victories, two. He's almost 30 years old. He's had two wins. But he's already made $7.2 million for those two wins. Each of them paid out $3.6 million each. Get this. The most money earned by any player for two wins, his first two wins in tour history. So that should indicate to you, if nothing else, LIV has infused a ton of money into the PGA because they realize they have to up the ante, like actually up the literal ante. So Wyndham Clark, talking confident, but looking super emotional when he finally dropped that putt on 18.
Winning Wells was huge for me because, you know, I had some people telling me in my ear, they're like, hey, well, what if something greater is going to happen? And what if it's you losing this means something better is going to happen and you learn from it? And I think that was one of the first times that I said, and especially after Wells, I said, okay, you know what? I believe that. And so I honestly think I should have won the Memorial Tournament just a few weeks ago. And, you know, Victor played great, but I was right there in contention and had a chance and kind of fumbled at the end. And in the back of my mind, I said, well, what if this is saving me for something greater? Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously I didn't know it was going to be a U.S. Open, but, I just had that attitude and believed that something better was going to happen. And, yeah, it did.
Rory McIlroy had an opportunity. He had multiple birdie putts that he could not get to drop. He was pretty frustrated. His very first hole, he has a birdie. And I'm thinking, oh, watch out, because he lipped out an eagle putt, but it really never came to fruition. So now it's been nearly 9 years, nine full years since Rory last won a major. And gosh, it's disappointing, I'm sure.
It is, but at the same time, you know, when I do finally win this next major, it's going to be really, really sweet. So, you know, I would go through 100 Sundays like this to get my hands on another major championship.
Oh, I love that. I would go through all of this, all the disappointment and failure, if it sets me up for one more, or if there is one more in my future. Ricky Fowler may be even more disappointed because he had a +5 in the final round. He's never won a major, had 7 bogeys, including 4 on the back 9. So he really struggled, couldn't get anything together. But yeah, I love the fact that he is still optimistic. This is why he's so popular.
After the last few years being in this position and kind of how I talked about how comfortable I felt this week, this is great. I mean, as much as it sucks to, you know, not be in the position I wanted to be after today, but we're just continuing to build and continuing to move forward.
Yeah, really good stories always, but the ultimate headline belongs to Wyndham Clark, who is the Cinderella story and is now a U.S. Open champion. We didn't have a chance to get to Lance Lynn, but what if I told you that a pitcher matched a franchise record with 16 strikeouts and 7-plus innings and lost? Well, that's tough to do on a baseball diamond. I hope that if you have this Monday off, you enjoyed. I know a lot of people are out of their routines. If you want to find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or my Twitter, A-Law Radio, our Facebook page too, we'll have the podcast posted within minutes. I got yard work to do today, but get this. I'm making a coconut cream pie. Now, here's the reason. It's my favorite, but it's also my significant other's favorite, and I thought I would do a twist on it. So I'm a little bit nervous. Producer Jay, give me thumbs up or thumbs down. I could go with the typical coconut cream pie, which I know is safe. I've made it 100 times. I love it. Or I found a recipe for a layer of cream cheese. So crust and then cream cheese with some coconut, which kind of provides a thicker base, and then the coconut cream pie on top of it.
Do it.
Should I do it?
Do it.
What if it doesn't turn out?
Do it.
Okay, I'm going to be brave. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make it today. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!